I see all the tape recorders are here, so I'll stand here and hopefully everybody. As you can see, it was a tremendously emotional trip and a tremendously emotional experience. I want to begin by telling you what it was like and what was said over in the Beis Medrash of Lublin. Many of us know the first part of the story. How was it that Rav Meir Shapiro came to think of the idea of the Daf Yomi? And look what happened. Tens of thousands of people have learned it. And tens of thousands of people continue. We saw over 100,000 people in America alone celebrated the Daf Yomi. What happened was when this little boy, Meiril, when he was a child, 9, 10 years old, what happened was his parents were moving from one neighborhood to the other. Now, he was a very bright child, and his mother hired a special tutor for him to learn with him every single day. But now that they were moving to a new neighborhood, this Melamed wasn't going to go to the new neighborhood. So she made sure that when they come to the new neighborhood, over there a Melamed will be waiting for them, and everybody will be moving the furniture off the wagons. But this little Meiril will have the new Melamed in that town. And for whatever reason, the Melamed was not there. Now, it could have been either something came up in his family or the signals were crossed. He got mixed up with the day. But they came there in the afternoon. And by the time nightfall came around, Rebbetzin Shapiro realized that her son Meiril was not going to be learning that day with the Melamed. And she sat down and she started crying. So her son asked her, "Mama, why are you crying?" And she said, "No matter what you will learn tomorrow, once a day of learning, once a day a lack of learning has gone by, you can never make it up. There's no such thing as making up on Tuesday what you missed on Monday. Monday is gone forever." And that cry, that she cried, the mayor understood it was a genuine tears. She really felt it. And it made such a roshim, it made such an impression on this child that forever he remembered the importance of what it means, chas v'shalom, a day should go by without learning. But someone once told me a very interesting thing, that Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, the Rav in Montreal, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, genius, sheba genius, he knew literally shas, bal peh, and he was one of these people that could take the needle test. That means that if you put a needle through a Gemara, he could tell you every word on that daf, beis, gimel, dalet, hey, whatever. It was just incredible. He was a Talmud by Rav Meir Shapiro. So he once said that many people make a mistake and they think that it was Rav Meir Shapiro who got the Daf Yomi going. It was his idea. But you want to know who really got it going? That was the Geir Rebbe, the Imre Yemes. Because after that summer, when Rav Meir Shapiro proposed the idea of the Daf Yomi, that Rosh Hashanah at night, the Ger Rebbe got up in this huge Beis Medrash, and there were thousands of Ger Chassidim that used to come. The Chassidim used to come with their sons, and the Rebbe announced, "Rabbeisai, tonight it's Aleph Tishrei, everybody take out your Gemaras, Daf Beis Amar Aleph and Brochus." And of course, if 1,000 people start learning brachas, that got the locomotive going. And it kept on going. So Rav Hirschsprung pointed out, of course it was the idea of Rav Meir Shapiro. But he said, but it was the Ger Rebbe that got it going. And he said, "You don't want to hear something very interesting that happened that week of Aseres Yemei Tshuva?" Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung heard it from his Rebbe himself. He said his Rebbe, Rav Meir Shapiro, got a letter from his sister, from Rav Meir Shapiro's sister. And she wrote, "You know, I dreamt of our mother. I never dreamt of her before. She's already in the Olam HaEmes for a number of years. And at night, Rosh Hashanah at night, I had a dream that our mother was walking with a crown in Gan Eden. I don't know why I had such a dream." And of course, Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung over the years understood, because that was the night that the Daf Yomi really got going. Once the Ger Rebbe pushed that locomotive and thousands of people started learning, it was all because of that influence of Rav Meir Shapiro's mother. So v'siyata d'shmaya mina shamayim, she had this dream of her mother wearing a crown. And I think that's the first lesson, that as we prepare for Kabbalas HaTorah, that each and every one of us must take with us. You know, there's a very beautiful vort that Rav Shimon Shkop said, and think about it, you'll see how this ties in with what we said about the mother of Rav Meir Shapiro and what we should do in our lives as we prepare for Kabbalas HaTorah. He says, it tells us, "V'limadatem oisam es b'neichem." It's talking lashon rabim. You should speak, teach your children, ledaber bom. And then it says lashon yachid, "V'shivtecha beveisecha," when you sit in your house, or "V'lechtecha v'aderach," when you're going in the way. It should have said, "V'limadatem oisam es b'neichem." It's talking lashon rabim. You should teach your children, "V'shivtam beveisam," when they are sitting in your home, or "V'lechtecha v'aderach," when you're going with them in the way. Why all of a sudden does it switch to the lashon yachid? And Rav Shimon Shkop says a gevaldik avort. He says it's very easy to teach children when you're learning a Gemara with them, but what is it, what they see, what you do in the privacy of your own home? What they hear, what you listen to when you're driving in your car? B'shivtecha b'veisecha, when you sit in your own house, don't think the children don't know whether you go onto the web or whether you read the Times or you pick up a Gemara. They know. They may not say anything, but they're watching. And it makes an indelible impression what you do in your spare time. Uvalechtecha v'aderach. Right? You can listen to Mike Francesa, right? There are a lot of people to listen to on the radio. But you could also take a tape of Rabbi Fran and Rabbi Reisman, not to mention Rabbi Krohn. But the idea is, there are tapes available. So your child, the next time they get into a car and they turn on the radio and they see that a Torah tape is going on, that means that their father or their mother, uvalechtecha v'aderach, didn't want to waste that time. So that which it says, a fabulous vort, that Chassidish Rebbes say, right before Kabbalas HaTorah, it tells us, v'chol ha'om royin es ha'koylois. All the nation, they saw the voice. Now you can't see a voice. You can't see thunder. You hear thunder. What does it mean? V'cholam royim es hakolei. Zokt Rashi, royim es anishma. They were able to see that which was heard. She'iyav shalureis b'mokamacha. No place else in time could anybody see a voice. So Chassidish Rebbe say, you know what it means? Royim es anishma. When children see that which they hear from you, when you tell them, don't speak Lashon Hara, but then on the phone they hear in the other room that you killed that shit up because you said those terrible words, I don't see it. Who asked you if you don't see it? Don't ruin somebody's shit up. If you don't see it, keep quiet. Nobody's asking you to ruin that shit up. Or if you tell your children, don't come late to davening, and you walk in by Baruch Sha'amah, they have to be royin. They have to see as anishma, that which they hear from you. You tell them, don't talk in laning, and you talk, you can't keep quiet, we're not talking ben gavra la gavra. Or anything else that you want your children to do, but they don't see it. It's not b'shivtecha b'veisecha v'lechtecha v'aderech. Why did Rav Meir Shapiro think of the dafyani? Because his mother cried. His mother didn't cry to make an impression on the little boy. She cried because she felt pain. And the child saw that, and that made the indelible impression. When we were at Lezhensk, many people know the very famous tefillah that the Rebbe Rabbi Elimelech has written. It's in many sidurim, and on the wall there, I don't know if you were able to see it, they had this huge parsha of the tefillah, and the main words in the tefillah are Adarabba. Just the opposite. Tein bilibenu shenira kol echad milas chaverenu v'loy chasreinam. Put it into our hearts that we should see the milas, the virtues of our friend, and not their faults. V'al yala shum sina me echad al chaver chalila. Nobody should hate each other. And when I thought about this pasuk, I told them that I really believe that that is the true pshat in the words. It is impossible, in my humble opinion, that the Torah meant that you should really love somebody like you love yourself. It's not Shia. Who are we kidding? You can't love anybody like you love yourself. And I don't think it would be fair that the Torah should demand that from us. I think the real pshat is that which Rebbe Lemelech told us. You know what it means? Why do we love ourselves? Because we're always thinking about the good that we do. I know many of you here. Wonderful, good people. But every good person has certain faults. But when you look in the mirror, you don't concentrate on your faults. You look at all the good things. That's why you're so proud of yourself. Love your friend. Look at the milus of your friend. Just like you look at your own milus. Why do you love yourself? Because you're proud of the good things that you do. If we can learn to concentrate on the good that everybody has bad, but you also have bad. You don't concentrate on it. So therefore, that's the true pshat v'yahavta l'reyacha kamoicha. And there's something that I mentioned there that is probably painful to listen to, but I still feel that it's important. Of course, I'm not talking to this neighborhood, talking to other neighborhoods. People will hear the tapes in other neighborhoods, some Islam, it's negeya to them, but of course, it's not negeya here. The Rebbe Rabbi Elimelech had a Talmud, Rav Mendel Rimanover. And Rav Mendel Rimanover said something that is so important, especially in our generation. Our generation, unfortunately, is so smitten with the problem of children at risk. And Rav Mendel asked the question. He said, why is it that we see many times a child is so sweet, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and then somehow during the teenage years, they go off the derech, they give their parents Gehenna on this earth, whether it's boys or girls, and they don't believe in what you believe, and they don't want to do what you want them to do. And we all know that in so many different places, Rahman al-Islam today, thousands of kids. In Brooklyn you see them, in Eretz Yisrael you see them in England, all over the place. How does that happen? So listen to what Rav Mendel Rimanover, the Talmud of Rebbe Elimelech, says. And it pays for each and every one of us to hear this, especially before Shavuos, especially as we plan the rest of our lives. And he says like this. He says, you know, it all comes from tray for food. Now, he doesn't mean tray for food. It doesn't have the OU, the OK, or whatever, the triangle K, whatever it is. He's talking about a different type of food. He says that when parents earn money dishonestly, whatever it is, however they do it, through a commission, through something that really is not coming to them, and they buy food with that money, it could have the best hashgachas in the world, but that food is spiritually treif, and that food goes into the bodies and the neshamas of the children, and it is metame them. There's a kilkul. There's a desecration in the neshama of children who eat food from money that was attained dishonestly. And if that's the case, any one of us who knows a family that has a child that has gone off the derech, can there be a greater Gehenna than that? Where a parent sees all their efforts are gone, finished. Everything that I lived for is in this child. And now this child is going off. Why? Because you had to make that $5,000 commission? There's no commission in the world that's worth it. So Rav Mendel Rimanover, the Talmud of Rebbe Elimelech, is telling us that if we want, of course there's no guarantees, there's a lot of things that go into it, but at least this is something that we could be careful about. And that is to make sure that all the money that comes into the house is kosher to geld, so that the food that we and the children eat is all kosher of food. When we were standing in Ger, I told them a very interesting story that should give us a perspective on our lives. When the Sfas Emes was Nifter, he was Nifter at the age of 58. 58 is not really old when you think about it. And at the Levaya, so two of the sons, the Imre Emes and Rabbi Tzalel, the two brothers, were talking. So the Imre Emes says to his brother Rabbi Tzalel, at least our father had Arichas Yomim. He said, what are you talking about, Arichas Yomim? He was 58 years old. That's not Arichas Yomim. He said, I didn't say that he had Arichas Shonim. I said he had Arichas Yomim. There's a very great difference between Arichas Shonim, length of years, and Arichas Yomim, length of days. No one in this room to guarantee for themselves arichas shanim. No one knows what tomorrow brings. People pass away at young ages, middle ages, old ages. There are no guarantees. Nothing. A guy can be on a treadmill every night and he has a heart attack on the treadmill. There's no guarantees. But every single one of us can guarantee that we are zeichat arichas yomim. Arichas yomim means length of days, making every day count. Not one day without Torah. Not one day without tefillah. Not one day without chesed. Not one day without Amos Yisrael. That's what Arichas Yomim is all about. That's what he said about his father. Hashem cannot demand from us Arichas Yomim. That's his department, not ours. But what Hashem can demand from each and every one of us is that we should have Arichas Yomim. And I'll tell you a very interesting thing. When we were standing outside the seminary of Sarah Schneer, so I told them that one of the beautiful things that she did in her seminary, that many, many schools do today, which is really so beautiful, and that is that they put up beautiful posters and beautiful psukim that are meaningful so that the children and the staff, as they walk through the hallways, will be inspired by them. And there's a pasuk in Tehillim, Tehillim Tzadik, Pasuk Yud Beis. And this was in the seminary in Krakow, on all the walls. And she would always talk about this. Limnois yameinu kein hoida. David HaMelech says to Hashem, Limnois yameinu, the amount of days that I have, kein hoida, let me know. Because if I'm going to live a long time, so I know how to space out my time so that I can learn all of Torah. But if I'm only going to live a short time, Hashem, please let me know. So that I know that I have a lot to do, I have to accomplish in this short span of time. That's the way the Metsudos understands this pasuk. However, she touched it differently. Limnois yameinu, to count our days and make our days count. Kein hoida, that's what you should teach us. Let us know how to make the most out of every day. My daughter has to give a talk, and the topic is time. It's a great topic to talk about. And I said to her, isn't it interesting that young people think time, there's so much time. If you think back to our youth, when we were 10, 12, 15, 17, the summers never ended. And now, 10 years is like nothing. Isn't it incredible? It's the same hours. But as we get older, time seems to fly. Weren't we just in high school yesterday? Didn't we just get married yesterday? What happened? How did this kid grow up and now he's a father or mother underneath ourselves? How did that happen? Teretz is that time is indeed fleeting. And I told them a beautiful, I admit, it's a total Hasidic story. Believe me, when you come from Lithuania, talking in Kelm and in Radin and Vilna, and all of a sudden you come to Poland by all the rebbes, you need a different mindset. Totally. Because some of the stories, I wouldn't even think what the Vilna Gaon would say about those stories, or the Chofetz Chaim, or the Alter from Kelm. But listen, you know, when you're in Lublin, you do as the Lubliners do, right? So listen to this great story that is told over about the Chayza of Lublin. An adorable story, but it shows us about time, and it shows us about perspective. It seems that there was a certain Hasidic Rebbe that was traveling in an inn overnight, and he comes in the morning, and he says to the innkeeper, he says, you know, the clock that you had chiming every, you know, throughout the night, every hour on the hour, that's a very special clock. What's the story with that clock? He said, what are you talking about? It's a regular clock. It just chimes every hour. He says, no, I'm telling you, this is a very special clock. There's got to be a history with this. He says, I don't know. What's so special? He says, I'll tell you what. He says, you know, every time that I am in an inn and I hear the clock chiming at the hour, I feel so depressed. Because it's 1 hour closer to death. Every hour, 1 hour closer to death. And it's very depressing. But somehow, in the middle of the night, when I heard this clock chime, I was elated. Because it was 1 hour closer to Mashiach. The owner said, wow, I never thought of that. Let me think about it. He says, you know what? I'll tell you where I got this clock. The Chayza of Lublin owned this clock many years ago. When he passed away, it went down as an heirloom to his children. And unfortunately, they came on hard times, and they sold the clock, and I bought it. He said, I knew it had to be a Rebbe's clock. A Rebbe's clock is different than our regular clocks, right? Different perspective of time. So we have to make the most of our time. It's true. Every second is closer to death. But every second is closer to Mashiach. And every day is a day where we can be Zoicha Tarich HaSiyamim. And maybe that's why we count the days in Sfira as we can go over to Shavuos. Because when you're talking about Torah, you're talking about reaching a level. It's every day. Limnois Yameinu Kein Hoida. I want to share with you now two tremendous perspectives. We were standing in one of the concentration camps in Majdanek. And it is so brutal to see. This is actually on a full CD-ROM. Obviously, we can only show 10, 15 minutes here. But I wanted the people to understand. Many people ask me, why are you going back to this place? What is there to go to see such horror? What is there to learn from it? And I'll tell you what I believe there is to learn from it. The Pasuk tells us, in Bereishis Memhei Pasuk Kavches, Vayeme Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu said, Rav, the Pasuk of Pshat, Rashi says, Oy Tzimcha, Rav li, Oy Tzimcha v'chev, I'm so happy, Rav means an abundance. That's why a Rav is called a Rav, because he has an abundance of Chochma. Rav, I'm so happy, Oy Yosef b'nichai, my son Yosef is living. That's the simple meaning in this Pasuk, Bereishis Memhei Pasuk Kavches. But the Bereishis Rabbah, the Medrash, gives us a totally different perspective. Vayeme Yisrael, Yankov said, Rav, my son is greater than I am. Rav Koichesha Yosef Bini. My son Yosef is much greater than me. Shekamat Sarais Higiyu, Vadayin Hu Oimei Bitsitkoi. He had so much Tzoris, and yet he remained a Tzaddik. He is great. And that's what I told all the people. We stand here right outside the barracks and we hear so many stories of Mesiras Nefesh. We have to know they were the great ones. Of course, Nebuch, a lot of people lost their frumkeit. We're not criticizing. We were not there. We can't blame anyone. But how many thousands, kept their frumkeit? I couldn't believe tonight as I walked in, my dear friend, Mr. Rosenfeld, out of the blue says, I got to tell you a great story about my father. Rabbi Yisrael Rosenfeld was in one of these camps. And it was a few days before Sukkot. And they put together some bread. They stole some bread. They didn't steal whatever. However, they got bread together. And then they went underneath one of the barracks. And they took some wood and they put it over their heads. And they were able to make a bracha leishev basukkah. Incredible. When I was reading about some of the things that these people did, it's incredible. They took two forks. Did it ever occur to you two forks are eight? That's how they were able to put wax on each of the prongs of the fork and have a Hanukkah menorah? Eight? Everyone thinks of that. And a famous story, many of you surely know this story, but I always feel so special about the story because it has to do with Bris Milah. The Blue Yeshiva Rebbe told over the story, a woman was carrying a bundle. He didn't know what it was. And Nebuch, these women, they were crying. They knew what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, she goes over to a German and she grabs a knife out of this German's breast pocket. And the Blue Yeshiva Rebbe, it's written, thought that she was trying to kill herself. He said, "My tired of Tochterol, my dear daughter, don't do anything to yourself. We have to try to live as long as we can." And before he could even say a word, she unwrapped that bundle. It was a little baby. And she took out that knife in front of the German and she made a bris to her child. And as this child was bleeding from the bris, she turns to Hashem. And she says, "Hashem, you gave me a healthy child. I'm returning to you a kosher yid." That was the Mesiras Nefesh. That's the Rav of those people. And you know what I think that we can learn from? There are many people sitting in this room that are beset by tremendous tzoras. Some with children, some with finances, others different problems. Many, many people are challenged in different ways. And yet they come here to learn tonight. They come and they daven. They come and they come to the Daf Yomi. It is they that are special. It's no big deal to come to the daf. If you're Baruch Hashem, you have a happy marriage and wonderful kids, and your wife lets you go, and your business is running by itself, fine, it's wonderful. But you're not the great one. The great one is the one that's struggling. The great one is the one that has all those problems. And he comes to shul. And especially if he has a smile. And he's not complaining. And he davens with fervor. He davens with emunah. He davens with betachon rav. That's what we learn when you go to some place like Majdanek and Auschwitz and you think about those people. And think about the people in our neighborhood. Many people who come to shul, sometimes they sit in the back, they're embarrassed. They don't have your friends, they don't have your family, they don't have your funds. But they're also people. They also want to be recognized. And that's what we have to learn. Those people who are beset by Tzoras Rachmona Litzlan and come and daven, they should be put on a pedestal. Rav, they are the great people in the neighborhood. And then I told him one more story. I'll tell you plenty more, but I'm just telling you one more that I told them over there. In that room, I'm telling you, it's impossible to describe what it is to look up at those shower heads and to know that the gas came out and those people who were standing there and thought they were going to get showers, hot water, when they began to choke and they began to realize what was happening. And I said to the people, imagine how people cried out Shema Yisrael in that room. And that's what I said, let us all say Shema Yisrael as we never said it before. Out of covet for those people. And then I told him this story. An incredible story that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman told over. Many of you know that Rabbi Chanan learned for a while in the Raden by the Chavetz Chaim. And one day, the Chavetz Chaim's son-in-law, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Levinson, they said it was absolutely a sight to see those two together. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch was very tall, the Chavetz Chaim was very short, but they got along beautifully. And one day, he was running the yeshiva, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch, and he goes over to his shver, and he says, shver, I'm giving it up. I can't, it's too time-consuming, I don't feel that I'm gaining personally, I want to learn, I want to grow, I just can't take care of the boys in the Beis Medrash anymore. So, the Chavetz Chaim said to him, he heard what he had to say, and he said, I want to tell you something. For sure you're not going to leave the Beis Medrash. This is your place, and this is what you have to do. But I want to explain something to you. Listen to this. We will get now an insight in Kriya Shema that is so remarkable. It says in the Pasuk, he said, V'yahavta eis Hashem elekecha, you should love Hashem, v'chol avovcha, uv'chol navshecha, uv'chol miyodecha. With your heart, with your soul. And what does miyodecha mean? The Pashat of Pshat, most people, taich miyodecha means your resources. So the Chavetz Chaim says to his son-in-law, I understand when you say b'chol avovcha. Fine. B'chol nafshecha. You're willing to give up your life. What does it mean b'chol miyodecha? What, you wouldn't be willing to give up your money? Money's nothing to you. Your resources, all these materials, nothing. So when you say b'chol miyodecha, what do you mean? It can't mean money. It can't mean possessions. That's not a test for you. You're a ruchni yizdika person. What is the pasuk talking to you about? He says, you know what it really means? He says, take a look at the Ramban. And you take a look at the Ramban, Devarim Vov Pasuk Hei. The Ramban says two words. Kolaymar, ma'oid, ma'oid. Very. That's what the word ma'oid really means. Toiv ma'oid, very good. Whatever is very in your life, that's what you have to be willing to give up for Hashem. Bechol mi'oidecha. The thing that's chashuv in your life. So the Chavetz Chaim says to him, what is chashuv in your life? Learning. And I'm telling you, that's what you have to give up for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of the future. Not your learning, but their learning. That's what's important. Bechol mi'oidecha, you give up your ma'oid. You know, when I heard that story, I took out my siddur and I underlined the word ma'oidecha. Because now, ma'oidecha means something different to every single person in this room. Some of us, ma'oid is indeed money. Some of us, ma'oid is not money. Ma'oid is food. So when you're out of town, and you don't have the proper hashgacha, and you're starving, what are you going to do? Well, if you're in New York, you're in the Five Towns, you can go to any restaurant you want, right? But if you're in San Diego, and you're in Columbus, or wherever you are, and you don't have all those foods available, and you might have to go chas v'shalom one night without supper, right? So what are you going to do? You're going to say Kriya Shema, and you're going to remember, b'chol mi'oidecha, I'm going to give up something that's ma'oid to me. I like to eat. I don't want to give up a supper. I don't want to give up food tonight. But you're going to give it up. You know why? Because v'yahavta eis Hashem elekecha, v'chol avovcha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol mi'oidecha. What a great insight
to what Kriya Shema is all about. What a great way to daven and make a commitment to Hashem. Rapam used to say, Baruch Hashem in America, we don't have any more than a Soyin. Nobody's killing us. Baruch Hashem, we don't have to worry about the buses and all those things they have to worry in other countries. We live in a free society, so what is our Nisayan? Our Nisayan is B'chol Miyadecha. Whether it's money or anything else that's important in your life. You know, the last day of the trip, we were supposed to go to the Kever. It's a huge Beis HaKvaris in Warsaw. And we were supposed to go to the Kever of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and the Netziv. And I wanted so much to go to Rav Chaim and to the Netziv, obviously, as any other yeshiva boy. You've learned so much about both of these great tzaddikim. What a schus it would have been to be able to be mispalel at their kvarim. But for whatever reason, there was a flat tire on one of the buses. Now, of course, it wasn't dangerous because the bus has 16 tires, but it delayed us long enough so that there was no time and we couldn't go. Fine. But I wanted to tell them something about Rav Chaim that most people don't know. Everybody who learns Torah understands. Everybody who knows the Soloveitchiks understands their brilliance in Torah. That's understood, for sure. But what people didn't realize was that Rav Chaim's house was mamash Rishus HaRabim. It was public domain. People came, people ate, people slept. As a matter of fact, Rav Chaim used to give out so much money to poor people that the Kehillah stopped giving him the salary. They gave it to his wife because they knew she would never get it. As soon as he got it, all the aniyim who came, they just planted themselves and he would give out all the money. As a matter of fact, even in his living room, they used to hang posters and notices. You know, this tzaddik is coming to town, this person died, there's a levaya, you know, this is mutter, this is us, or whatever. You know how you go into these shuls and they got all these posters? His house was mamash like a Rishus HaRabim. So I was going to say to the people, you think there are no houses like this today? I'll tell you where there's a house like this. If any of you ever go to England, you go to Stamford Hill, there's a guy named Jackie Levinson. Jackie Levinson was very, very close to the Ponovizhirov. Now, I heard so many things about this fellow that I had to go see it myself. So I went to his house. It is absolutely incredible. He has made his house into like a dormitory based medrash. Mishalochim come from Eretz Yisrael. They plant themselves. They eat there. They sleep there. Some of them are there for 2 weeks, for 2 months, 3 months. It's unbelievable. His wife and his daughters are cooking these big institutional pots. She's always in the kitchen. And when I came there in the afternoon, the guys can't go around collecting because everybody's at work. So they wait at night. People are sitting there either sleeping in one room, eating in the other room. Ah, it's Mamash Alei Yehudim. So I got to tell you a story that happened in Jackie Levinson's house. He's sitting around one night at the table. And a whole bunch of people. Nobody knows each other, right? So one guy says, how long are you here? He says, I'm here 3 weeks. Another guy says to another mashulam, he says, how long are you here? He says, I'm here 4 months. So another guy turns to Jackie Levinson, he says, and how long are you here? He says, I'm here 36 years. He says, don't say na chutzpah. So I remember after the trip, a few months later, I had the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael. So I went to Rav Velvel Soloveitchik's son, Rav Meir. I had never met him. Just a very sweet, kind, gentle soul. And I said to Rav Meir, you know, I have Agmas Nefesh. Because I really wanted to go to the Zaydis Kever, his Zaydis Rav Chaim. I wanted to go to the Zaydis Kever to be Mispalel. But, you know, I was going to go tell him about the flat tire. I told him, well, we just couldn't make it there for whatever reason. So he saw I was looking for a story of Rav Chaim. So he says, you know, let me tell you a story about my Zayda. He said, you know, that when he came to Warsaw after the First World War, all of Brisk was burnt down. Brisk was, all the houses were out of wood. So first of all, there were terrible fires. And during the war, all the Yidden had to run away. And so they came to Warsaw. So in Brisk, when anybody would see Rav Chaim, they would talk to him and learning. What else are you going to talk to Rav Chaim about, right? They're Kulei Torah. But in Poland, they were more Hasidish. So what do Hasidic people do? Many times they stand in front of the Rebbe and they just look at him and they watch. They watch him breathe, they watch him eat, they watch him walk, they watch him die. They just look at him. So Rav Chaim would come into a shul in Warsaw and the Hasidim would just stand there and look at him. And you know, after a while he felt uncomfortable. He said, like, what's cooked? They're like, what are you looking at? So one of the Hasidim said, Rebbe, you know, state in the Svarim that if you look at a tzaddik, so then you become a bigger Yerushalayim. So on the spot, Rav Chaim turned to them. He said, "Shteid va'amich kulam tzadikim, kut tazuch alein. You become bigger tzadikim. Va'amich kulam tzadikim. You're all big tzadikim. Everybody's a tzadik. Look at yourselves. You'll accomplish more than looking at me." But the truth is, a person really has to make a commitment to be close to a tzaddik. Every one of us has to have a rav, a rebbe, or rosh yeshiva that we are very integrally connected to, so that we feel that we have a connection to Har Sinai. I believe that so strongly, not only because it's a great chinuch for your children, and your rebbe doesn't have to be mine, although I see a gentleman there, my rebbe is his rebbe. But otherwise, I'm talking about everybody else. I don't want to, my rebbe should be everybody's rebbe. He'll have no time for me. But the idea is that everybody has to have a connection to Har Sinai. And I want to tell you one insight. When you have a connection, now of course this is a connection, this goes back to Rav Chaim Volozhiner, but the idea is, when you learn from Gedolim, and you see the Svarim, all of a sudden you get an insight that is so elevating that can just carry you for months. And I want to share something with you. Every person, now of course it's a few months already since this happened, so most of us, it's on the back burners, we don't think about it anymore. And that was the tsunami. Right? 200,000 people killed within seconds. Why did it happen? What was Hashem trying to teach the world? Now I believe until Mashiach comes, until Eliyahu HaNavi comes, we'll never know the true reason. But we are obligated to try to figure out a lesson. You know why? Because the Gemara tells us, Ein Puranias Bola Olam Ela Bishvil Yisrael. Punishment doesn't come to this world only because of Klal Yisrael. In other words, we have to learn something from it. So what in the world can we learn from that tsunami, that terrible, terrible catastrophe? And it bothered me terribly. I heard all these reasons, not one of them really made sense. And you read it in the Jewish newspapers, and everybody's trying to give a touch. I wasn't satisfied until I saw something in the Sefer Ruach Chaim. I'm telling you, you have to hold on to your seatbelt when you see what he writes. Listen to this. To me, the most startling image of that incident that happened was that as the water was coming over the beachfront in many of these hotels, as we all saw it, it was coming faster, they say, than a plane. There was no way anybody could get out of the way. So Nebuch, Rahman al-Islam, parents and their children were just swamped and sunk right away. But there was one guy that was holding on to a tree. He was way up on a tree, and he was holding on to that tree, and you could just see the water just flowing underneath him, and he was saved. Now, watch this. The Mishnah in Avos, Avos Vav, the Pasuk, the Perek that tells us Kinyan Torah. Gedolah Torah Mishnah Zion, this is. Perek Vav Mishnah Zion. Gedolah Torah Shehinai Senes Chaim Loisea. Torah is great because it confers life to those who practice it. Ba'olam Hazeh gives us life, or Ba'olam Haba. And what's the Pasuk? Eitz Chaim Hilam Achzikim Ba. It's a tree of life to those who hold on to it. Now listen to what Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes. Ki Ha'olam, this world, is Yam Zoyev, an ocean that's raging. Ve'galav Soyarim, and the waves are storming. La'adbiya, to sink us. B'metzuos Ha'tayves, in the depths of desires and ambitions, achaboli notzel, the one who wants to be saved from all those secular waves that are flooding this world, immorality, secularism, materialism, all those waves are trying to flood us and sink us. The only way is yoichaz be'etz achayim. You gotta hold on like that guy did to that tree. He a Torah. That's the Torah. Vehi atavlin, that's the medication. Le'yetzer hara v'taivosov. We all have a yetzer hara. We all have taivos. We're all out in the street. We see everything. You can't go out there with closed eyes. How are you going to save yourself? It's a terrible battle. The only way is through Torah. V'hapoyresh mimenu. Somebody who separates from Torah. Kapoyresh mechayim. That's as if somebody separates from life. And maybe that was the lesson of the tsunami. The lesson was thousands and thousands of Jews throughout the world are being sunk every day spiritually. Go to the colleges outside New York. Baruch Hashem, we live in a ghetto. Nobody would ever think the five towns are a ghetto. But it is a ghetto. We have everything, Baruch Hashem, and within 10, 20 miles of us. Go 40 miles, 50 miles outside New York, they don't know much about Yiddishkeit. Our brothers, our sisters, our second and third cousins, gone. Nothing about Yiddishkeit. They're all being sunk by these terrible waves. Baruch Hashem, DRS, the Rosh Yeshiva and others provide shiurim to make us understand what Torah is all about. We're in neighborhoods where we can hear Rabbanim, where we can have chavrusas. How grateful we have to be. How much advantage we have to take before Shavuos. That's what we're all here tonight for. We're all here tonight to make that commitment to the Eitz Chaim Hilamach Zikim Bar. We go on different trips, spiritual trips, physical trips, each thing to inspire us. But the main thing that it all boils down to is all the inspiration has to be that motivational force that brings us towards Shavuos and Kabbalah Satayra. Hashem should help that all of us, we should be able to inspire each other. We should be able to grow each day. And finally, when we come to Kabbalah Satayra, to make a commitment to Torah and your Shemayim and Chesed. And then, and only then, will each and every one of us be Zoychet Arichas Yomim. We should be Zoychet to that and see Mashiach in our time. Thank you for inviting me and thank you for listening.